Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Looking for Love in All the Wrong Dust Jackets, a show where three disgruntled harpies talk to you about everything we love in romance, whether that's books, movies, TV shows, whatever we like. My name's Liz.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Wiggles.
And welcome to the show. Today, we're going to talk to you about the movie Austinland, based off of the book of the same name. I don't remember the author. Wiggles, do you have it?
I do. It is Shannon Hale.
Okay.
Nice.
It came out in 2007.
And the movie came out in 2013.
Sure did.
Okay, before we talk more about the movie, though, I have to warn the people. I have to let you know that we are crass, we're unhinged, and so just a general warning, we swear, we talk about all sorts of naughty times. And if you're not into that, that's a you choice. That's not a me choice, that's a you choice.
Yeah, we pre-warned you. Also, there will be spoilers.
Yeah, the whole thing. So, yeah. You know, don't get any bold, sassy ideas that the ending won't be ruined by the end of this.
Or the beginning of it.
Yes.
Because we don't talk linearly. We talk in a circle.
Never.
So what have you guys been up to? Get me caught up with your week.
Well, I am just about finished with Not Your Crush's Cauldron.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the third in the April Asher witchy series. I can't remember what the series name is called, but it's the third of the Maxwell sisters, who's got an angelic love interest. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. For those of you who have read the first, you know him as Vax. And I'm really enjoying it. So close to the end, which makes me nervous because they've been teasing this time. There was not early on like, ooh, that's just a bunch of teasing. And I'm like, you don't deliver the goods. I have come here for the goods.
How does it compare, though, to the first and second book so far?
Okay, so like the first one, like I said, they came in hot pretty early, right?
Yeah.
Which was great. They never went like full out at the beginning, but they were always like, listen, we're hair's breadth away from like Pound Town. Here we go, right? And then the second one was just a very different pace than either of the two of these. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, the series overall is just really fun. If you go into it with the mindset of looking for something serious, you're not going to find that there. But something super fun? Yeah.
I do love a good funniness along with the romance line. I do love that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes it's nice to read a book that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Exactly.
And this definitely doesn't. Like, this series knows that it's you're there for fun and funny and... So, yeah.
Danny, what you got for me?
Okay, so I didn't do a lot this weekend because the three of us got really drunk.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have never been drunk. I don't know what alcohol is.
Yeah, it's a dirty fucking lie. We got really intoxicated and then I was on the struggle bus because I realized this. I almost said it earlier that I almost said we are in our late 30s and then I had to correct myself mentally because I am in my late 30s. You bitches aren't.
I mean, I'm literally right behind you.
Yes, but you are still technically mid, whereas I am not anymore.
I've always been mid. Womp womp.
But I did read a little bit when I got home and could slightly focus. So I was, I am almost done with The Gargoyle from General Management, which is by Katie Pryor. It's that book series that I had talked about last time. There's three books in it. It's Live, Laugh, Lich, The Orc from the Office, and then now The Gargoyle from General Management. There is tail action. There is so much tail action. But they're all super short books, but they're funny and kitschy, and you know, I mean, are they? Oh my God, great character development and great world building books. No. Is it something that's kind of fun to read and is, you know, just kind of, yeah, let's do this. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And they are spicy. So they're kind of fun.
Nice.
That's nice.
Liz?
Yeah, my turn. So I read Unfortunately Yours by Tessa Bailey, which is the next book in the series that starts off with Secretly Yours. Check out our podcast episode about that. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I really liked this book. It is fake dating, like Rivals to Lovers. It's cheesy and funny and goofy, and I loved it a lot. It was like a 4, maybe even a 4.5.
Ooh.
Well, again, it's if you go into it being like, this is just going to be fun, then you're going to have a great time. Mm-hmm. Going to mm-hmm. have a good time.
It's on my shelf waiting to join the red, but it is unfortunately in the to be read.
And then I also finished A Soul to Guide by Opal Rain, which is the 4th in the Dusk Walker series. Again, check out our episode on A Soul to Keep, also by Opal Rain. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, part 2. This one, I loved it, but it I don't know the writing style this time. I don't know if it was like written quickly or maybe my brain just wasn't in the right place for it. So it's a 4. I still loved it. I still love the characters. I love the world. I love everything about this universe. So yeah.
I definitely didn't need to catch up with you on the Dust Walkers. Wiggles is, it's not Wiggles' thing, but I was like, hells yeah.
Here's the thing, and I think this is one of the things that we do successfully. We each have our preferences. Mm-hmm. And so you might go, oh, well, that one wasn't what Wiggles likes, so maybe it won't be for me, so I'm going to like steer clear. Or vice versa, you might be like, that's a Danny hot take, love that 100%. I have to read that book.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? Well, and like the Duskwalker series I've mentioned before, I have to be super careful about reading it because they are long books. This one was 644 pages. And the rest of the world doesn't exist when I read these books. So even though book 5 and 6 are already out, I was like, you cannot read book 5. You need to now do all the things that you didn't do for the last couple of days while you just read this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely understandable. I always have to, because there are certain times where like I go on family vacations and stuff, and a lot of my family vacations, I get to sit and read. And then there's definitely times where I'm like, you are not reading that when your grandparents are near you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not that they know what you're reading. They don't. But still, there's just, it's a line. There's a certain line. Like, I'll read a romance novel. There's certain ones that, nope.
Well, this Duskwalker has a knot. So then we get to go into the nodding realm. So maybe this isn't a grandparent read.
Yep. As somebody who is not going to read the rest of the series, unless provoked. But
and by provoked, she means that we'll make her read it for this podcast.
I was trying to say it nicely.
Well, I don't think we would get all the way to 4. So
yeah, you never know. You don't know what our future holds, Liz. I didn't think this weekend I would be knockout drunk, but here we are. Anyway, so how does this one have a knot, but the others don't?
Well, it's like how they all have different features based on the creatures that they consume. So.
So he consumed a werewolf?
Or like a dog? I don't know. Oh,
well, dogs that's... and wolves have them too.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It also this one gives you a lot more about the world because he's the oldest Duskwalker and he ends up with an elf. So you get like all sorts of backstory, all sorts of world building, which is nice. Some of the questions are answered. New questions are asked.
Isn't that always the way? They're like, oh, yeah. we're gonna answer your questions and you're gonna be like satisfied with that, but also here are 25 more, enjoy, and you get to ponder those until you read the next book or the next 3 books, because somehow that's still not answered.
Yeah
I love reading. It's so relaxing.
I know, isn't I know. It
Yeah, so are we ready to talk about Austinland?
Yeah,
yes,
let's go into it.
Let's do it. I will say, like, not even a spoiler, maybe like a precursor. If you've never consumed any form of Pride and Prejudice, a lot of jokes will go over your head in some capacity. Mm-hmm. So just kind of keep that in mind. You don't have to read the book. Watch the 2005 Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice. Or if you're feeling like you don't have anything to do in your life, you could watch the miniseries, which is forever long, but very, very accurate to the book. So go with that. But yeah, when we first get into this, what happens, Danny?
Okay. So there is our main character. Her name is Jane. Shocker. And she is creepily obsessed with Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice specifically. Mm-hmm. And to the point where you walk into her house and, dear Lord, and we will get into that house, just saying. But
worse yet, I think it's an apartment.
Yeah, it is. I think it's an apartment as well. But so she has decided that she is going to, she wants to go on vacation to this place called Austinland, where you get to be completely immersed in like the time period, and there's a guaranteed like romance story plot line that's written out for you and everything. Mm-hmm. And it costs a lot of fucking money to go and do this. And her best friend's like, bitch, no, this is dumb. Don't do it.
As best friends are wont to do.
As best friends are wont to do, because sometimes you have to tell hard truths if you're good friends. But so she's like, fuck it, I do it anyway. And she goes there. And she's kind of getting treated real shitty by the lady who runs it and her creepy ass husband who does things. And she thinks that she's falling for the like guy who's the stable boy.
Essentially. Yeah.
Essentially. And but she's also kind of like really getting into this other guy, and shocker, none of it's real except for maybe this other guy. So we'll talk into it. But
so I guess I'll start us off with let's talk about Jane's life before she goes to Austinland, because they do really set up a fairly pathetic storyline for her.
Yeah, she works kind of a dead end job, as we all do sometimes, you know. Yeah.
Do we know what she does for her job?
It can't be a very high up corporate job based on the cubicle she's in, but also based on the fact that she can barely afford to keep her old car from the 90s.
Yeah.
She drives a Tercel.
Oh.
Do you even know what a Tercel is? No. You know why? Because it died off in the 90s.
Where it should have.
Yeah. And she decides to sell that off to go on this, like, what she thinks is going to be a game changer vacation. But before that, she's this hopeless romantic who's dating some of the worst guys.
That one guy walks into her office and literally goes, "What's up, horse face?" And then slaps her in the ass with a ruler.
Yes.
After he also takes her teacup and just like drops it on the ground and breaks it.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact thing he says, but it's something along the lines of, "I chose you intentionally, Jane, because I knew that you were old and single and sad." Like, it's like, that's what it surmises to. And you're like, bro, what the fuck?
And I don't know if we ever like settled this debate between the three of us, because this is actually one movie that we sat and watched all together. Mm-hmm. But does he also work there?
No.
No, he just showed up at her office and smacked her in the ass with a ruler and broke her teacup and called her horse face.
Yeah, because so the one clue we get to that is that her coworker sees him coming in and goes, "Oh, your ex at like 10 o'clock or something like that."
Yeah.
As like a warning. So no, he doesn't work there. He just like walked into this place of business and felt entitled to show up and be gross.
Well, he could have worked there. He could have still worked there and been her ex-boyfriend at the same time.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
But either way, it's...
I mean, I'm just saying, I have worked corporate jobs. I still work a corporate job. And there is no way in hell that an ex of mine would be able to just walk into my work building.
But there's also no way in hell my coworker can slap me in the ass with a ruler
right. And
get away with it.
Hell no.
Right.
Especially when other people can see. Other people are watching this.
Well, like, here's the thing. I cannot see any time that if I'm standing in my professional environment, that somebody would smack me in the ass, even if I knew it was like my best friend in the world, that person wouldn't get punched in the face at that exact moment. Mm-hmm. Because that is not the place.
No, I just don't think it's possible that he works there, because otherwise either she is working for some of the shittiest people in the fucking world.
Yeah.
Or they would have had him thrown out. Like, there's just no other way, you would think.
Either way, it definitely colors her sad, sad life.
Here's the thing. I don't want to be like, oh, well, it's her fault her life sucks. But part of it is her fault that her life sucks.
Yeah.
She's so obsessed with Jane Austen, and specifically Pride and Prejudice, and specifically Mr. Darcy, that like she's making out with a guy watching the Pride and Prejudice like miniseries and is like, no, this is the best part. And it's like, he was a fucking asshole. He destroyed your property and stormed out like a child.
Yeah.
But like, all, so you're dating somebody who good riddance, right? But like, if that's how you're approaching it with every person, that you're always comparing them to Mr. Darcy.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's not healthy.
Well, no. That scene is just one scene, right?
Right.
And I could totally see, like, let's say we were showing somebody who had never seen Lord of the Rings for the first time. And all of a sudden, Gandalf is coming over the ridge in Two Towers with, you know, everybody there in the middle of the battle at Helm's Deep. And somebody tried to make out with me during that, I'd be like, what are you doing?
Well, yeah, no,
absolutely.
You're
looking to the sun on the third day.
Right. I mean, like, I get that. But also, and I also get that that's... It's so far into the miniseries. Like, how long has this guy been watching?
True.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's interesting because she compares every guy to Mr. Darcy and yet chooses guys that are so far from Mr. Darcy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At least for what we get to see, which seems to be the story of her life.
Well, and it's kind of a cautionary tale a little bit as far as like comparing things to media. And
mm-hmm.
because like I'm obsessed with quite a few things. I do not compare dates. I don't try to compare those to the people that are in my obsessions because it's not a thing. They get to be their own people. You know what I mean? So I totally agree that like not that her life sucks because of her, but a little bit that her life sucks because of her. Like mm-hmm. you can't make people be something they're not.
Well, it doesn't matter what your obsession is. If you are truly obsessed, you have a problem. Like yeah. you do. And it's because it seems in many ways harmless. And I'm sure she was rewarded when she was younger for being a reader. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone in here knows what that feels like. But, I think that nobody was really paying attention except for her best friend who was like, good God, this is too far. It's weird.
Yep.
And then when we finally get to see her bedroom, it's all like the justification you could possibly have has gone out the window. You're like, yeah. This is the bedroom of a serial killer.
It really is. Yeah. The Darcy was here over top of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gross. Honey.
The whole movie is kind of a cautionary tale of like living in your fantasies versus living in the real world.
Yes.
But that bedroom is bad.
Oh, God. It cringed me so bad. I'm like, here's the thing. You can make nods to like the Regency era and have it look very classy and cool without it being that.
It was like a cross between a little girl's bedroom and an adult woman's obsession with the Regency era. So it was simultaneously too innocent and too perverted.
Yes.
And absolutely. That was the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, he punched the head off of Mr. Darcy and she kept it.
Yeah.
She also didn't fix it, which I was like, it's still attached.
Like, you could definitely still fix this.
Duct tape the back of that and it would probably hold up just fine.
Yeah. There was no effort put in there.
Yeah.
I think it was the glitter letters that really killed me. So Darcy was here is done in those big glitter letters that you can get to like paste on things, like the ones that are, you know, like 6x6 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Over top of her bed.
Over top of the headboard.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to assume what she does in her free time. We don't get to see. But like, can you imagine you go to have sex with this woman?
Yeah.
And you walk into the bedroom and that's what you see.
I am not a man. I have never gotten a boner, but I feel like I would be flaccid as fuck.
Right? She also has her own creepy doll that's got like the voiceover for Mr. Darcy that says, I love you most ardently or whatever. And her friend's like, no. And she's like, it's a collector's item. And I was like, I'm with your friend. It's weird. because it's also like badly made.
Oh, yeah.
Like in no way is it actually a collector's item. It's some creepy voodoo doll that someone has made for her online. And I'm like, ma'am, no. No. But here's the thing that I think should contextualize all of this. If she was a guy, it would be Steve Carell from the 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yes.
With all his dolls and action figures and all of that kind of stuff. That would be the equivalent, right? And for all the shame that we give a character like that, to act like she is not of an equal caliber of like, you need to get out more, hun. I think it's doing a disservice. Women can be weird too.
Yep. Sure can.
Sure can.
Look at the three of us. We're not quite to that level.
Well, yeah. goes and like hides everything in my bedroom. The funny thing is my bedroom is the least decorated of all the rooms in my house.
I'm like, people don't need to see that.
No one will see that. Made myself sad. Anywho, so she decides that she's going to go on this big vacation to Austinland, and her friend is like, literally, I think this is going to go horribly, and so I'm going to make a bet with you. If you come back from that and you're, oh, this was a mistake, because it is, you got to de-Austin your room. It's weird.
How much do you think that trip cost? Because it cost enough that it was like her life savings and it was going to completely
cleaned out her like her entire bank account.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't there. Like she was there for at least a couple weeks. Like it wasn't a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So on top of that, she's also not earning when she's on this vacation.
And she had to, it was in England, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
She had to fly to England. She had to fly to England.
Mm-hmm.
But she also had the cheapest package.
She had the copper package. And the other ladies had the platinum elite.
Yes.
Don't ask me why I remember that. Of all the details. But, yeah, I think that she was there for at least 2 weeks, maybe even a month. Because there's all these jokes about them, like, sitting around doing cross-stitch and shit for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it makes more sense with the way the story arc develops. That it's not just like, oh, I was here for 5 days. And now it's over. That would be super creepy.
She did make the entirety of the other woman's face in needlepoint.
She had that much time to learn and practice needlepoint. And that included the amount of time that she spent avoiding working on her needlepoint.
That's true.
I'm terrible. I'd be like, oh, I get to needlepoint? Cool.
And she also fell in love with two men's in that amount of time.
Yeah. Yep. I just think it minimum I will accept is 2 weeks. I would not be surprised to find out that it was a month.
Would you do it?
Hell yeah.
I mean, not thinking about the cost, obviously.
But we're going to pretend I get a free trip. Yes.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Like, I would not. But here's the thing. I would not want the Mr. Nobly or even Sexy McSexy Man. What is his name? Captain East. Captain yeah. East. I mean, that's great. That's awesome. But the whole time I would be anxiously on the inside going, okay, but this is like, this feels gross. This feels a little bit like prostitution.
Yeah. See, I'd be the same way. I'd be like, I don't want the romantic storyline. Can I just chill in a simpler time?
I just want to hang out with Jennifer Coolidge as Miss Charming and Colonel Andrews. That's all I want. I just want to hang out with those two. They're my favorite characters in the whole thing.
I don't know. Like, I like the idea of being able to just get away and read my books all day and whatever. But the part that I would hate is all the like dinner party stuff that they had to do. I'd be like, no, I don't know you people. Don't make me sit around and like try to talk to you. That sounds terrible.
You know, I don't like a lot of reality TV, period. But if you told me that there was a love matching TV show where like a Love Island, if you will, only it was Regency era, I would watch the fuck out of that.
Oh, I would too, actually.
Especially if they had to follow Regency era rules.
Yes!
Oh, fuck yeah.
It would be so much fun to watch. Especially if they're just as horny and inappropriate, but they can't be. Right? So you're like, no hanging out at the hot tub, having like confessionals and then like making out. No, you have to be like staring at each other across the room.
Yeah, I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, I sure would. I would even be like, sign me up. I don't want to be out from the outside looking in. I want to be in the middle where all the tea is happening.
Yeah, you would be in it, but to not get your own romance.
No,
romance.
No,
you'd
yeah,
be
no.
like, I'm just here to watch it go down.
I'm just here to fully be like Mrs. Bennett making matches. That's my
See, and I'd fully be there to be Penelope Featherington and
yes,
whistle down that shit.
Oh, yeah. Like, every confessional would be like, did
okay,
you
so.
See? I'm just saying someone needs to create this shit because it would be gold.
Mr. Rose told me when we were outside in the garden that he accidentally saw somebody's ankle.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, they all have to have pseudonyms as well.
Of course.
It's mandatory. This is my dream now.
Great.
I don't know how to make it happen, but it's my dream.
I want you to create this series just so I can watch it.
Just so I can be the nosiest bitch up in that bitch. Oh, wow. What a time.
Well, moving on from that lovely debacle, I think we should talk about Jennifer Coolidge's character because I fucking love her.
She makes the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
Without her, the movie sucks. Like, I'm just going to be so honest. If you take out every part that she's in, making it funny as shit, it would be like such a meh movie. But she elevates it to like top tier.
It's so funny. So one thing I love about Jennifer Coolidge, she can be the totally biggest bitch on the planet. Mm-hmm. She can also be the most genuinely sweet character in an entire movie. And you never know which one's coming.
Yes.
Until it's there. Because I really thought for just a second, I was like, oh, she's just dumb and she's going to be an asshole this entire time for just a hot second. And then she was the most genuinely sweet person in this entire movie.
Still dumb, though.
Still dumb. Oh, yeah.
Dumb as a box of rocks.
Dumb as a box of rocks. The comment about, oh, they want me to tell you that the chamber pot, you don't use the chamber pots in your room because they don't know what to deal with when it's piling up because the toilets actually work here. She had been there for like a half an hour.
Right.
How'd she pile that up already?
That's the implication is that she's already piled it high. So you're like,
ma'am.
Oh, God. And just the things that she says, like, in general, she's like, you're up here in the creepy tower. Don't kill yourself, Jane. Think about all those people who hang themselves. And then the next day, they feel differently. But they can't do anything about it because they're dead. And you're like, what?
Or when she steals all of the dresses so that Jane, who has the copper package, can wear the nice dresses like everyone else. And she's like, mm-hmm. I'd love stealing from that woman.
Yes. She absolutely hates. Oh, gosh. Why can't I think of her name?
The lady who runs it.
No, not the one who runs it. Lady Amelia Hartwright.
Oh, Hartwright. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she calls her Fartwright. She loathes her. It's so funny the way she has completely been like, Jane, number one fan, love this one. Lady Hartwright, eat shit.
To the point where she shoots her in the eye with an arrow.
She does.
And it gets infected.
I don't think she did that by accident.
Oh, no, I don't think so either.
See, you could maybe make that argument until she reaches into this woman's dress, pulls out her like breast enhancing cups and slaps her across the face with it. I don't think there is a worse insult in woman language. I really don't think there is.
I really
is.
Don't think so either. And it was great.
You've called into question her bosoms. You slapped her across the face and you've injured her eye and made her look like super gross.
That may have been why it got infected.
Who knows?
Because of titty juice.
The titty juice. Gross.
Did you suck in that bitch?
She also says one of my favorite lines, and I'm going to butcher it here, but it goes something along the lines of, I think creativity is a waste of time.
Yes. Because she's just waiting for the men to get back. And because it's when they're like making their hats, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she it's a great part. And she also yells at Lady Hartwright to not copy everything she does right after saying, I think creativity is a waste of time. Yes.
Which, by the way, did you notice that the bonnet she was making was fabulous?
Of course it was.
It was gorgeous. And I did really laugh at don't copy everything I'm doing because the hat that Hartwright was making looked nothing like it.
I also love that. So Lady Hartwright has like this running gag of her being one of the worst singers in the world. Mm-hmm. And before we get to like the worst of it, she's just humming while the three of them are sitting together. And Lady Charming goes, could you shut your hole? Could you just shut your hole?
And there's also a point where Lady Hartwright is trying to read from a book to the three girls. Charming is just like, I've got one. It's like starts talking over her the entire time.
Yes. And she's like, Jane, listen, if I were to sleep with you, I would actually speak with you the next day, unlike any man you'll meet 100 years from now. And then Jane has to explain to her, she's like, I don't think Mr. Darcy would have said anything like that. They never would have even been in the same room alone together. The look on her face is one of just like pure disappointment. Like, I thought you were on my side.
Oh, no.
Oh, she's so good.
While we're talking about funny characters, Mrs. Hartwright is also actually extremely funny.
Yes.
And her character just like degrades throughout the movie. She starts being like a little posh, and then she gets more and more ridiculous until she's just walking around with T-Rex arms and like.
Yes.
Well, she's kind of bitchy at the beginning, but the more you get to know her, you realize she's just playing this part, right? Like, yeah. she is fully into the RPG. And so like when her former fling at this event, because she's been there many times, is what it sounds like, shows up and is paying attention to Jane instead of her, she's like, excuse the fuck out of me. And it's just stuffing her face the whole time. And I'm like, I get that though.
Yeah. I really love the reveal of, so Jane and Lady Hartwright get into the carriage to leave Austin Land, and she like slumps down and starts talking, and you find out she's not British at all. She's an American.
And her husband is very old.
I just love the way that's delivered in general. There's no context. No one questioned anything. She's just like, my husband's old.
My husband's very old.
Okay.
Excuse the fuck out of me. What? You're not British?
Yeah. Well, so she also just, because she's committed to this very faulty British accent, she has some of the funniest lines, second only to Jane Coolidge. Like, constantly is calling them bosom sisters.
Yes.
The first time we meet her, she like grabs both of their hands and holds them to her breasts. Oh man, the way she screams when she sees Jennifer Coolidge's character at the ball, and she's like, it's infected, like lunges at her. And then Jennifer Coolidge, like, they bounced off of each other so well, because mm-hmm. then Jennifer Coolidge is like, she looks very piratey.
The actress also does something with her mouth mm-hmm. where she pushes her lips out just enough and like over exaggerates with them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I wish this wasn't a podcast and I could show you what it looks like. I rewatched it today before we recorded, and I just stared at her mouth like, how do you do that?
No,
it looks
so
weird. No.
She's really good.
Yeah.
She's incredible comic timing, because she's also, a lot of the things she has to do very similarly are reaction shots. Because like, so one of my favorite lines in the entire thing is, they're playing like a game of whist or something. And so it's Lady Hartwright, Lady Charming, Colonel Andrews, and the host. I can't think of what her name is.
Mrs.
Wattlebrook.
Wattlebrook, yeah.
Yes. So she makes like a comment about Mrs. Charming's face being so pretty or whatever. Great gestures, hilarious. And Mrs. Charming responds with, that's because late at night when I'm all alone, I put my face in the fire. This woman has to react to that, like, without being like, dear God.
There's no way somebody wrote this. They just told Jennifer Coolidge, say things, and we'll record a bunch of it and see what we like.
Well, I just love Colonel Andrews comes back with, like a kiln. Because he's so fucking good, too.
Yeah, So all of the men are supposed to be actors playing these parts. They're all of these hired people, and all of the women are the patrons who actually paid to be there. But other than Jane, our main character, everyone else is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I got to give it to these actors. They committed to all of these choices.
They knew what movie they were in.
I guess Mr. Nobly is not over the
top. Yeah, no, he's not over the top. He's...
But even he, like, has his moments where you're, like, part where he's acting with her in the play, or the part where he's reacting to Jane's well-chosen or not well-chosen, depending on which character you are, song that she's forced to play. He definitely fully is bobbing his head along. He's like, yes, this is a banger.
This is the song of my people.
One thing that is true of every interaction that they're supposed to be having at this campus where they are having the Jane Austen experience is that you're supposed to constantly be in manners of the time. So Lady Hartwright's like the only one doing it right, technically. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, she's at the pianoforte singing her songs horribly, like a dying goose.
Yeah.
And and Colonel Andrews is finally like, reached a breaking point, and he's like, dear fucking God. And he's like, Jane, you should do a song. And she's like, oh, no, I don't have any songs. And Lady Wildsbrook is like, I insist, and it's like goes full Viper on her, right?
Because she's a bitch and she's constantly trying to pull Jane down when she's really trying to fly under the radar there.
Well, I mean, she's in her mind, she's doing her part. She's doing the evil mama character, right?
Who is shitting on the like orphan that we just took in and we have to take care of, but they're not really our priority and don't get in the way.
Right. She knows what characters she's supposed to play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she forces Jane to go play piano, and slowly but surely, I mean, anybody who was a millennial immediately knew the song, but like you might not recognize it directly right away, but all of a sudden you're like, oh, It's Getting Hot in Here by Nelly.
She's like, I can only play one song on the piano. And she's like, oh, it'll be fine, do it. I go sit down at the piano, and you can tell she's like, this is not gonna go over well.
Nope. It felt well, and this is kind of true of the whole story because we haven't talked about it too much, but they do definitely try very hard to sort of give her the Elizabeth Bennet story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this is the equivalent of, I keep wanting to say Lady Danbury, but that's not it. Lady Catherine de Bourgh forcing Elizabeth to play the piano, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's really funny.
I do want to talk about a little bit about, so they're in this gorgeous house. And because Jane got the copper package, she's in a much smaller room and everything. And they kind of make it seem like it's supposed to be this terrible room. That room was actually lovely. I would have been happy as a clam in there.
Well, I think at first Jane is too. She's like, oh, this is still nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nicer than her room at home.
For sure. This is like what she should be attempting to do with her room.
Exactly. Yes. Like it was small, mm-hmm. sure, especially compared to the other women's and everything. But really, you're not going to be spending that much time in your rooms anyway. So I would have been happy as a clam with it. It's cute. It's nice. It's clean, you know.
Well, and the class difference between Jane and Lady Charming and Lady Hartwright is very clear, right? Like, it's clear to that they have no concept of money. And she's just like, okay.
Especially because Lady Charming ends up, her real character, buying Austen land at the end of the movie.
Just wants to buy it and does, and then turns it kind of
into a theme park.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not doing what it was doing before, but also what it was doing before was not appropriate.
Yeah, no, it's not. It does kind of push, as you said before, it kind of pushes on prostitution, even though they're not supposed to touch each other. They're mm-hmm. not, there is no, that is 100% a rule that is laid out from the very beginning, is you will not be touching them. There is no kissing, you know, that kind of thing. But they definitely took it beyond what they're supposed to, too.
Well, nobody stops East from doing a goddamn thing, no matter who it's with.
Yeah.
Well, he seems to be the star of the entire ensemble.
Yes.
Because he's also an actual like soap opera star or something like that.
Yes. And a regulation hottie. Like, goddamn. Looking for every opportunity to take his shirt off. And God love him for that.
Mm-hmm. To the point where Mrs. Charming, Lady Charming, spills a little bit on her chest when she's drinking something. And he full on takes his shirt off so she can use it as like a rag or something. And then Mr. Norbly in the background is like, just use a handkerchief. And he's like, nope, it all got to come off.
And then like proceeds to just put his vest back on.
Correct.
That is the compromise he's willing to make.
And God love him for it.
Oh, yeah. Again, you have an actor who really knew what he came to do.
Yep.
Like, he was like, oh, you want me to be the hot himbo? I'm in. I'm so in. Do you even understand? I will so commit to the bit.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
One of my favorite things that he does is when they do this play. So the end of the entire experience is that they have a ball. But what they want to do before the ball is they want to put on a play that the Lady Waddlesbrook wrote.
Which made no sense.
No, it didn't make a lick of sense. But that's not the point. And Captain East and Mr. Nobly, for some reason in this play, have to fight at the end of it. And what the actor does is takes his like shepherd's crook and like starts spinning it like it's a bow staff and he's a ninja and he's like, I'm gonna take you down. I'm like, what are you doing?
And then somehow managed to hook himself in the nuts. I've watched this movie like at least 20 times. I still don't know how he pulled it off. Like a little part of me is like impressed and like wants to know more, you know, like what's happening down there? Because you had to have something to catch. That's all I'm saying.
Wiggles.
I'm just spitting facts here.
Oh no.
Unless we're implying that he caught himself in his own asshole. I just don't think it's possible. I've had a lot of time to think about this.
I bet. Oh, I also noticed in the play when Captain East dies. So everybody dies at the end of the play except for Lady Charming as Aphrodite. He dies fucking ass up like a toddler who's sleeping face down ass up.
After he's somehow in his death throes managed to take off his shirt again, which was already not covering almost anything. And then Lady Heartrate's taking forever to die, just singing her death. And then you get Lady Charmin's, they all died forever. They were all dead forever.
Just wanting her to die already. Yes.
God damn, it's so good. Oh, I honestly feel a little bit bad for the main characters, which are Jane Hastings and Mr. Nobly, because like, they were surrounded by some of the funniest fucking actors. And like being the straight man in that situation is just not nearly as much fun.
I actually kind of really enjoyed the play because of that. So yes, everybody around them is being ridiculous, but they're having a genuinely funny time enjoying mm-hmm. each other and laughing in the middle of it as he's dying on stage, quote unquote, you know, because mm-hmm. he's doing it badly and they've rehearsed this and everything.
Well, he also has his lines taped on the inside of a shield that he's using.
Yes.
And this is a key point in the movie because it is when we learn, if you pay enough attention or you think about it, it is when we learn that Mr. Nobly can't act, which means he is not actually, he is one of the people playing a part, but he can't act.
No.
So his relationship with Jane is not an act.
Right. There's also this great moment on stage where he says, I love you. To her. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be in character. He's supposed to say it. But when he says it, his eyes all of a sudden widen and you're like, oh shit, he meant that though.
Mm-hmm.
He meant that though.
He didn't mean to mean it, but he did mean it.
Yep. And you're like, oh, buddy, that caught you off guard. And I liked that. Also, his eyes were very blue in that moment and I couldn't stop looking.
And the thing is, you couldn't have this movie be good in spite of how amazing this ensemble cast is without them playing the straight man, because mm-hmm. otherwise you wouldn't get moments like when Charming is trying to play footsie with Nobly under the table and he's just like horrified. Yes. Or like later on, early on into the introductions, though, Lady Heartwright says something about, wouldn't you love to take a turn about the garden or something like that? And Mrs. Charming goes, I would love if you were to turn me upside down in the garden. And he's once again like, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Plus, this is one of my favorite lines in the entire movie. So she pretends that she has something in her eye while simultaneously shoving Nobly's face into her titties, right? Yes. And I'm like, good on you, girl. You know what your assets are and you know how to play them to your advantage. But he finds a way to like extricate himself from that situation, and Andrews is like, I should handle this. I'm a military man. I never shirk duty. And he goes up to her with the monocle that he has, but doesn't use the entire rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, yes, I see it. Oh, yeah. Fire. It's just like, oh, God. It's, you cannot have those moments if you haven't let the straight men set it up first.
Yeah. I actually really love, so there are moments where they show kind of the behind the scenes of Austin Land, because, I mean, this is their work, so they do have off times and everything, and it's almost jarring when you go from what the Regency era situation is going on to their, where I'm supposed, their living quarters, for lack of a better way to put it. And they're like out by a pool somewhere and there's bright colors fucking everywhere. And they're in the most ridiculous clothing, except for Nobly. He's in fairly normal clothes. And it's so ridiculous. And I think it's because they need a break from like the Regency thing. And it's so funny. It's almost jarring when it switches it to it.
I mean, it definitely is giving off the same energy as when you see a...
bad luau?
No. What is it when it's like a sports character? Mascot.
Yes.
Mm. It's like seeing a mascot take their head off.
Yeah.
Well, it's also meant to show us another view at Nobly not fitting in with everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's always very quiet in those scenes and everything. And
but the mystery, the part that is supposed to mirror that or be parallel with that is Martin, who is the stable boy that Jaina is supposed to be getting with.
Well, and he's complicated because he appears so real, especially early on. And so you think, oh, this might actually be romance for her. Like, it's not just, this is not just like the play acting that she's doing with all the others, which is fun, but just that's all it is. It's just fun. This one might actually be romantic.
Which is why I hate him even more. Because he is trying to convince her that she's actually in love with him.
Well, and he's doing a good job because those scenes are pretty romantic when he takes her out onto the boat ride and they like share a couple kisses and she like keeps running away from the all of the Regency stuff she's supposed to be doing to go hang out with Martin in the stables or wherever he is.
Right.
It's my favorite line with what you just pull a pregnant horse out of nowhere
because they have this whole moment where she thinks she snuck off to go be with him. Mm-hmm. And in reality, he's been waiting for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they have this horse that is going to have a baby or has very, very recently. Mm-hmm. Because that was not actually a newborn horse. It was way too dry.
Hell no. Way too dry. Way too big.
Yeah.
Well, at first, I thought that that scene with this newborn horse that we don't get, we and Jane don't get to see being born. It's just really bad writing and props and directing, like just bad movie. Mm-hmm. But later you piece it together that it was just all staged for Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really the first clue that you get that, oh, maybe this is not what I'm thinking it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I definitely thought, oh, well, that was just they didn't have, you know, they couldn't find a young enough horse or because there's a lot of liability issues with having that young a horse and everything on set and everything. So I thought, well, they're just. They couldn't get a younger horse than that. They, you know, didn't properly goo the horse or whatever. But no, it's just that they were doing that on purpose.
But the big giveaway that it's not real is that he sends her away to go get straw, as if that's something that the horse is going to need in order to give birth.
Well, and they do usually put straw down for them.
Which is already in there.
Which is already in there, one, two. If the baby's coming out, that's the least of your concerns.
Right. Like if it's happening in this moment. And yeah, a horse giving birth can be really quick sometimes, but like it's usually not that quick.
Also, that baby horse was standing and walking around and knew how to use its legs.
Right. Because they just deposited this horse into the stall.
Yeah.
And so like all the signs are there, but you're like, oh, this must just exactly like Liz says, is this bad movie moment, but well-intentioned and easy enough to look over. Mm-hmm. I also, this is sort of off topic and we can come back to the topic at hand, but I have to talk about one of my favorite things about the setup of Lady Waddlesbrook's version of Austin Land is all the fake animals.
Like, oh yeah.
There's like all these like animal statues everywhere.
That are badly taxidermied at that.
Yes. Like in the commercial for Austin Land. She's like petting this fake lamb. And then there's a scene in the barn where there's a chicken, but the chicken is very clearly a stuffed chicken. And I think that there's another scene where there's cows out in the pasture that are not moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fake pheasants that they shoot.
The fake pheasants, yeah.
Well, I assume that was just because you shoot fake pheasants.
You shoot clay pigeons.
You do shoot clay pigeons, but like, you know, like a mix between the concepts. But also Martin, he just has a wheelbarrow in like several scenes that have very clearly has like a fake goose or something in it. He just keeps pushing it around.
Yes. All the clues are there that he has no purpose. Like when you look at the contents of his wheelbarrow, you're like, What
are you doing, sir? like if you were actually going to, like, if you were a stable person and you were going to clean out a stall, if you had a wheelbarrow, you would have a pitchfork. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so he's supposed to be scraping off the moss of that boat inlet there. Mm-hmm. It's already been scraped off.
Yeah.
It's like in a loose pile, right? So, oh my gosh. I remember when I got to the end the first time, I was like, motherfucker. And then I watched it the second time and I was like, so this is on me a little bit.
Like, why didn't I notice?
I will say I was a little grumpy after we watched it the first time because I was just like, no, I hate everyone. I hate it all. And then I did rewatch it today and I was like, okay, I can see it now.
I haven't gotten to rewatch it, but I'm going to. And the thing about watching this with Wiggles is Wiggles has seen this hundreds of times. She literally has it on DVD.
I do. Proudly.
And then we're sitting here watching it with her and we do the typical thing, which we shouldn't do because we hate it when other people do it to us, is me and Liz are like, but what is this? What is happening? And then she's like, I say nothing. And we're like, you suck.
I was trying so hard not to give anything away. I was like, don't look at my face.
I didn't want you to say anything. I am glad you gave us the one clue we needed, which is that Jennifer Coolidge's character is not a bad guy. Because like, if she turns out to be a bad guy, I'm walking out. Like, that end of my day.
I would have flipped your fucking coffee table and walked out of here.
Yeah.
In hindsight, we would have had a less painful Sunday had that happened. But, you know, it's fine.
You win some, you lose some. It's fine. Well, and the other thing about Martin that is so insidious is that he is more committed to the bit than all the other actors. Mm-hmm. Like, there are parts where no one's around and yet he is committed. Or no one's looking at him, but he's acting as if in the off chance they did, he's setting this thing up. So there's a part where shortly after Captain East has arrived, and this whole time Lady Hartwright has been like being distracted by Nobly, right? And so Captain East is like, well, she's already got one, I'm gonna go for Jane then.
Mm-hmm. Because that's their job, to right, pick one of the people and then have a fake relationship with them,
right? And gross. He is like, he takes it so far. He's like kissing up her arm and all this. And we get a panaway shot to Martin watching them, dropping his wheelbarrow of nothing, looking very disappointed for an extended amount of time, and then just rolling away. And there's no evidence to support that Jane saw him, but he was fully committed to the bit in that moment, which makes it really hard up to that point to distinguish, oh shit, this might not be real, because mm-hmm. why would he do that if she's not looking?
Well, and the worst part about the way that he pursues Jane, because he is told to, hey, you're Jane's partner, so you guys are going to have this different romance than everybody else, is that he acts from the get-go as if they are
outside of this situation. Yes.
Outside of all of that. Like, yes. He just straight up tells her, like, oh, I'm just working. And she's like, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to be here. And then they start talking about, like, Austin Land mm-hmm. and this concept and everything. And he plays music at one point in time, and they're not supposed to have any modern contraptions. Mm-hmm. So he goes way too hard on this and convinces Jane to the point where the audience, us, are tricked as well to think that he's a real guy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's what pisses me off, too, because here's the thing. If you're going into Austin Land, you expect that you're going to, you know, that these people are going to be lying to you, expect them to be actors. He was not included in that explanation. And so that if something had happened, it could be considered something by coercion.
Well, and then he kisses her, which would not have been appropriate for them to do, because it's Mrs. Wattlesbrook says to these women right away, there is no touching unless it's like the dances or mm-hmm. you know, things like that.
And with the exception of Captain East, who proves to be above and beyond in all things.
Correct. Yep.
All of the rest of them are adhering to that, right?
Exactly.
And so why would she think that this wasn't real? Because all this time, he's been crossing lines that you would not be able to cross otherwise. That's the point where I'm sort of like, oh, this sort of feels like prostitution.
Yeah, it does. And that's why I'm kind of happy that Jennifer Coolidge's character buys Austin Land.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm going to make this fun. You're like, fuck yeah.
Well, she has an interesting romance situation too, because
she kind of ends up with him, doesn't she?
Kind of.
It's hard to tell.
Well, okay. So something to keep in mind is that all of the women, Jane, Lady Charming, Lady Hartwright, they all do get sucked in at some point mm-hmm. with their partner. And I think that's sort of the like crux of all of this is that, yes, you're paying to be fooled, but not in that way. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that always feels like there's a line being crossed.
Yeah. Well, she, Hartwright makes out with the captain as well. Well, they're supposed to be rehearsing for the play.
Right.
And Jane and Nobly have that entire conversation at one point when they break character mm-hmm. and they talk about, and I think it is when they see those two making out.
Yeah.
This is a really dangerous game to be playing.
Right.
Yeah.
Because at some point, what is fake and what is real get really blurred.
Yeah. She flat out says, this is a dangerous game. I don't want to play anymore.
Right. Yep. And with Jane Coolidge's character,
Jennifer
Coolidge, Jane's, Jennifer's, they're all the same. So Lady Charming and Colonel Andrews have this partnership where I think he's genuinely having a little bit of fun playing his part, mm-hmm. except that she is fully falling in love with this man.
Yeah.
And he's like, Miss Ma'am, I'm so sorry, but I like the penis a lot.
Oh, yeah. There's a scene when they, towards the beginning of the movie, where they're taking a turn around the garden, and it's Lady Charming and Colonel Andrews, and the camera focuses in on one of the footmen
mm-hmm.
who winks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to tell based on the camera placement if he's winking at Lady Charming, which is probably at the first watch who you think he's winking at. Rewatching and I'm like, is he winking at Colonel Andrews? Is there something going on between these two men?
Well, and then it's sort of characters are super horny in this movie.
Yes.
Well, and then it gets confirmed when there's a instance where Jane screams for help and Colonel Andrews comes running and he's in his British flag boxer shorts and one of the wigs and coats of one of the footmen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? So you're like, I wonder what 2 + 2 =.
Yeah. Well, and then at the end, during the ball, Lady Charming like forcefully kisses Colonel Andrews.
Who's terrified.
Yes.
It's a little like, it's like, on one hand, he definitely plays it up for laughs. But on the other hand, you're sort of like, but are you really that scared, my guy? Blink if you need help.
Well, they have a conversation
yeah.
where they're sitting on a bench and Lady Charming's like, I didn't know that I went too far. And he's like, you did. You went too far.
And if we're to be together, you must never touch me again.
Yes.
And then she's like, even the servants are getting some. Because they are. The servants are constantly in the background, like getting at it. And you're like,
damn, son.
Well, and it's funny because she like dresses the women to very dowdy, like makes them wear these horrible wigs mm-hmm. and bonnets and doesn't like let them wear any makeup or anything. And then the men, she's like, the tightest pants we own.
Yes.
The tightest pants we own, please and thank you. And they all get tans for no reason. Like, doesn't make sense, but they will all be tan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
For some reason, Lady Charming, after she buys off her real character, I don't remember her actual real name in the movie, but Jennifer Coolidge's character buys Austin Land, and yet she's still running it with Colonel Andrews.
I think they became actual friends.
Yes, I think there was a conversation had there where he was like, listen, I need, now that I don't have to put on a show anymore, I need you to understand where I stand.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny at the end where Jane just like cannot bring herself to tell her. She's like, you know, I think he might be perfect for you.
Yeah. And Lady Charm is like, oh my gosh, thanks. I thought you were going to say he was gay.
Yeah. Honestly, the thing with the servants being all horny for each other felt like the background characters in a play
who oh, are sure. Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, nothing I do matters. And that one over there gave me the wink, so.
It definitely had the vibe of like a repertory or like touring Broadway show where they're like, I'm here, I do my thing, and then we be fucking.
Right. Yeah. 1,000%. It almost felt like, in the movie, we don't know for sure if that's true, but it feels like the Austin Land experience can only happen for certain months out of the year. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a Renaissance fair kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, for this temporary amount of time, we will have this Austin Land fair.
By the way, if we just ruined theater experience for you, we are real sorry. However, we all did theater, all three of us. And yes, there is horniness fucking everywhere. Backstage.
There is no such thing as an innocent play. I will tell you that.
Yeah, no.
Because at least two people, bare minimum of that cast, are getting down and everybody else is like annoyed because you're like, if I have to hear one more thing about your relationship that is so messy. Okay, but now we're going to go on and we're going to sing a show tune.
We should talk about, so the head of Austin Land has a husband.
That she does.
And he is a salty.
Well, so for those who have watched the Pride and Prejudice miniseries, you'll get a little gifty-poo right there because he is one of Bingley's sister's husband in that miniseries. But it's very clear that she, either Lady Wildsbrook married him for his money and then just pushes him around and like is like, this is what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. And that his way of getting his way in this situation is to hit on these young women who come to this event and has clearly accosted at many and probably assaulted many as well.
But one of the things I did like is in that situation with Jane, she entirely defends herself. Like, yes, Mr. Nobley and Colonel Andrews come and find this situation, but she has like knocked this old geezer to the fucking ground,
right?
Because as she says, she becomes a ninja when she's frightened and in what is
when
what?
She's startled in an unfamiliar place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that cracks me up. I'm sorry, apparently I'm a ninja when I'm startled in an unfamiliar place. And I was like, yep, sure.
That is one of the moments, and the moment leading up to it where we find out that she is a ninja. Those are some of the first few moments too where we're finding out that actually there might be something more to this Nobley guy than we've been thinking before.
Yeah.
Because before, you just assume that he is the Mr. Darcy character of the story, right? Because he's cold and aloof, and so when you finally win him over, it's like, yay!
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Jane even accuses him of that, right? And this is after they've started to get to know each other, that's what he's here for.
Mm-hmm.
But he, in both of those moments, does not have to be as earnest as he is. Which, again, could be an act. And that's the whole tricky thing throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm. You're like, what is real though?
Well, since we're talking about Jane and Nobley, who are the true love interests, the people who actually get together at the end, I don't get it. I'll be honest with you. I see the scenes where they kind of have their banter and then they did the play together and they were cute. But I don't get the whole, so at the end, is it Henry's his real name?
Yep.
Yeah. Flies all of the way to the U.S. To find her. And I don't get the romance. Like, it didn't do it for me. There was no pining. There was no swooning. There was no, like, bits and pieces throughout the movie.
Well, I did, in my little bit of research that I did on this book before, or this movie before we started recording, read that the director actually felt like the movie could have been even so much longer, but she had to cut a whole bunch out. Mm-hmm. And I think that and I think it's the right choice. I think she probably chose to cut some of the romance in the name of the comedy. Because, like, in many ways, Jane and Henry are kind of just a vehicle for the shenanigans that happens.
Yeah. Oh, I would definitely say this movie is a comedy. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know if I would categorize it as a romance. There is a romance in it, but I don't know if I would categorize the movie as a romantic movie.
I mean, I didn't hate their relationship clearly as much as you do.
I didn't say I hated it. I just said it was blah. Like, it existed, but it didn't do anything for me.
It weirdly did something for me. Well, there you go.
It was sweet. And when you look at their moments with the lens of he's clearly falling first, mm-hmm. it's a little bit cuter. But
see, and I was, that's what I was seeing, especially with, like, during the play when he said, I love you. And then he had the oh shit moment because he realized that that wasn't fake.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. I was like, oh, look at you. You're having an oh shit moment in front of a lot of people. But I just, yeah, it was the cute moments, like them laughing on stage together, being ridiculous, because he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to be in the play.
Well, and stories like these are always harder to tell in movie format. I'm sure in the book that it goes more in depth. But, you know, we do see him get jealous, like, immediately when Captain East shows up. Mm-hmm. He's like, get away from my not woman woman, my woman. She's not my, but she's my, get away from her. Okay. But he is always, like, looking to her, looking at her. Mm-hmm. And is surprised, I think, to find that somebody who's attending his aunt's Austin land is actually somebody who very bright and not the expectation that he had, which was that these women were desperate, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about him saving her on the horse.
That was cute.
I love it.
It was also annoying. It was both.
Yes. The shredding of the dress. I'm like, dude, that was unnecessary. Funny, but unnecessary.
Well, the whole scene, I can't justify any of that scene in my head. So they're riding back. Everybody's on their horse. And Jane's horse has decided it's not listening to her, which mm-hmm. I get it. Horses do that. And so Martin, the stable boy, takes her horse and his horse and is like, I'll be back with another horse. And I'm like, this makes no sense.
We were totally, like, all three of us sitting here were arguing it, too. We're just like, so walk next to the horse.
Yeah, walk with him. He's walking.
That's another moment, though, that you're supposed to take away that there's something wrong with Martin. There's that something wrong with his story doesn't add up.
Right, except if his story was to get with her, why would he leave her behind?
Because he's supposed to make the daring rescue, not nobly. He just didn't arrive on time.
Yeah, I suppose, now that you say that.
It's still a bad setup.
Well, no one said Wattlesbrook was good at writing.
It's true, you saw her play.
That's true. But then nobly rescues her in the rain and has her sit in front of him on the horse. But to do that, he has to rip her dress, which...
The alternative was, though, that he would have had to, like, bunch her dress up, which would have stopped him from damaging the dress, but also she would have had her, like, I'm not saying, he made some choices, is what I'm saying.
She also could have sat on the ass of the horse, side saddle. Just saying. It's very easy to do.
I could imagine, though, that he would look at her and go, I don't have any confidence that this woman will be able to hold on.
I mean, also fair, but...
I don't know. She just shot, like, three pheasants. Well, shot the pheasant three times.
Yeah.
She was very
that
adept...
poor damn dead pheasant.
...at the shooting for some reason that we don't know.
Well, but she's also very hesitant and shy in most interactions.
It's
until
true.
You piss her off, and then she's suddenly like, look at me, I'm spunky. And you're like, oh, okay.
I just don't understand. And this happens in movies and TV shows all the time, where people are just out here ripping dresses. What are these dresses made of? Tissue paper?
Well, that was a very flimsy fabric. You can tell by how easily you can see through it.
It's sure. true.
So it was probably like a muslin, which rips crazy easy.
That is true.
Also, it shows how strong he is. He can rip this fabric. I don't know. Look, Nobly has his flaws too.
He's a history professor. How is he out here ripping people's dresses?
that's how he's ripping people's dresses. He's read up on it.
All the bodice ripping?
Yeah. He's secretly a romance novel fan.
I would believe that, yeah. Actually.
Yeah. He loves his historical romances.
Yeah.
Gotta love a bodice ripper.
Mm-hmm. Mm. He's like, I know all the tricks. So something else I want to talk about is, so Jane Seymour, she plays Lady Wattlesbrook. She does a really good job of knowing the character again that she is playing and showing up for it. Like, she's just like behind the scenes for a lot of it. And yeah, a lot of her face is just like, I'm prim and proper and whatnot. But like, when it's found out that Lady Hartwright has somehow given her phone to Jane, right? Like, she covers up for Jane because they find her cell phone in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're not supposed to have any modern devices. The way that she turns up her acting so quickly and is like, oh no, this is terrible. We'll just pretend it never happened. It's so funny. And she does that so many times where mm-hmm. she's just like really good at going, oh, I'm talking to a different character who paid more money. Guess what? I'm going to give you a much better experience.
Oh, she definitely kisses Lady Hartwright's ass throughout the whole movie.
Well she's clearly a regular.
Yeah. As you find out, Lady Hartwright's been there just a bajillion times.
Yes.
I also, the dressing scene when Lady Charming and Jane are getting their clothes and everything, she's like helping Lady Charming pick out all of these dresses and Jane gets literally like one brown dress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, you poor thing.
But then Lady Charming steals her all of these dresses and we get to have a makeover scene,
mm-hmm. yes.
which then leads to Jane flirting terribly with everyone.
Yep. She's like, fuck it, I'm doing this.
It does not matter whether you're a main character or not, whether you're a servant, what gender you are. She's in it. She's like, I am in love with you also.
My favorite is when she goes up to Lady Hartwright and just like strokes the back of her hand across her face,
and Lady Hartwright's like, I'm shocked, but I kind of like this. There's a different version of this story where it plays out where Lady Hartwright and Jane fall in love. I'm just saying.
I yep. would love that story.
I would watch the shit out of that too. I would love it just as much. You get a little bit of where this could potentially go, because after the cell phone situation and Captain East has shown up, Lady Hartwright pulls her into this random room and is like, gives her this whole speech about being a bosom sister, and the two servants are just stuck there watching like, this is about to go down. And then instead it's just her trying to like blackmail her into giving her Captain East. You know, this could have gone a different way.
It really could have.
It was very much giving. So in Queen Charlotte, when all the servants are like around the dinner table, when they're about to bone down.
Yes.
They're like, leave. And it's like, oh, my God.
You know, there's been a number of movies that we've watched where we have said there were moments when like, typically the two female leads where I'm just like, are you two getting together?
Please?
What? Is that where this is going? I think that's just us mentally going, hey, Hollywood, you could give us more funny lady romance.
Yes, please. And thank you. Yes, please.
We would love it. Sadly, no. Instead, she fell for Mr. Nobly, I guess. Whatever.
He is cute. Especially,
he is cute.
Especially at the end of the movie. He looks a lot like Tom Hiddleston. And I'm just like, you're very nice when you're like in your civvies, yeah. civilian clothes.
While I do get your complaints about him, you gotta admit that ending is very sweet. I think that he fully is just like, whoa, I have not met somebody who made me feel this way, at least in a very long time, because his either wife, partner, girlfriend, yeah. Something like ran off with his best friend. We get some lore there earlier in the movie. And this Jane has just come into his life and is shaking things up for him. And she's like, this was kind of insane. You do know this, right? Like, it was, you could have just mailed this to me. I'm not going to actually sue your aunt. Like, it's fine. He's like, I'm not here for her. And then he has this great line where she's like, no, this is insane. You're not supposed to actually have your fantasy. And he goes, did it ever occur to you that you might be my fantasy? And I think that that's maybe the the lens you have to readjust in order to understand why their relationship works. Because while she was having a moment of like, oh my God, he's the Mr. Darcy fantasy, he's having a moment of like, oh my God, this girl is my fantasy.
It's true. She does really fit the Elizabeth Bennet vibe.
Very much.
And as a history professor, I'm sure he's read all of the books.
Yeah. One can only hope. Well, and I do really like her line where he's like, my name actually is Henry. I'm a history professor at Oxford. And she's like, oh, that's really nice.
This movie is definitely one that you need to watch several times.
Yes.
One of those times you have to have subtitles on because they're just, things come at you hot and fast.
It's true. But their lines are so good. And every time I pick up on a like a new one that I've somewhat missed or a look that I've gotten from a character, I'm like, yay, more lore. I've noticed it before multiple times, but I love the part where they're running after the play is done and she's like, a man and a woman can only be together when they're in motion, right? And
yeah,
it's very cute scene. And that is one of the best, honestly. I should, before I fully move away from that, should talk about how this is one of the best Jane Nobley moments, is that they go up to her room and then he's like, so what does etiquette say about me being alone with you in your room? And she's like, correct. Actually, you need to get out, sir.
I was so disappointed. I was like, not even a kiss.
I was like, right? God damn it.
But then he comes back and is like trying in his best way to say, this is real. I'm real, without actually saying it.
Mm-hmm.
He takes her hand and does the kiss on the inside of her palm. And I'm like, that is always hot.
Yeah, that is, it is.
I've never watched that in a historical drama and not been like, yes. Yes, this is hot, right? Mm-hmm.
Anytime like the wrist kisses,
or
I'm just like, oh, or like the thumb lightly grazing across the wrist. Oh yes. Man, it's too much.
Or my personal favorite, like undoing a necklace and kissing.
Or like in The Duke Who Gets Desperate, putting the necklace on and kissing.
Yes. Oh, that was good. That was so good. So like you have this, you do have some moments. They do really try to enrich that there is this potential. And I think at the end of the movie, you're like, yes, this is not, we are perfectly in love. This is the potential to be something really good.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to my point, the reason I bring that up is because as they're running, two of the servants are just like making out. And they part ways and they're like, nothing happened here. They both have lipstick staining their mouth.
Like their entire face. Yes. It's like up over their nose.
Like almost. Full clown face, honestly. Yeah. And they're like, nothing to see here. And as soon as they're far enough up the stairs, they're like back at it. Oh, it's so good. They gave us a whole world. That's all I'm saying.
They truly did.
I was really entertained by the servants. And I think when I watch it again, because I will be, I think now that I'm not paying as much attention to the main characters, because I know what's happening, I will be watching the servants in the background more, because I'm sure there's just a shit ton of stuff that I didn't notice.
And it's interesting, too, because I've watched this movie with a couple of different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting which things people pick up on. The first time I watched it, one of the lines that the whole group was like obsessed with was Jane Coolidge, very shortly after the like getting dressed into the Regency era clothes, is in front of the mirror and she's like, look how skinny I look with my arm behind my back. That was like the running joke for the longest. We were just like, look how skinny I look. Oh, God.
Once again, honey, her name is Jennifer.
Did I call her Jane Coolidge again?
Yes. Sure did.
Oh, God, this is too hard for me. You can't have two J names.
I will say the one thing that I don't think makes a lick of sense, and I think it purposefully doesn't make sense, is there's not supposed to be, again, any modern contraptions, except Jennifer Coolidge has a full-ass TV in her room.
She does. Which is conveniently playing Captain East's, like, I soap think opera. It's a soap opera, right?
It looks like a soap opera.
Right? Either way, his television show when he's not there. Which makes me wonder, was it pre-programmed to play that? Or did she, like, find out that Captain East existed and then hunted it down?
I think both are valid.
Yeah.
And then there's also a PA system. You hear frequently throughout it where they're announcing like the next activity. And I'm like, you can't. You ruined the vibe, lady.
There was very many moments like that in where we're like, but wait, why is there a PA system and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Liz took a special, you mentioned it every time the PA system went off because it irritated you.
If you make rules, you cannot then defy your own rules.
You can if you're Waddles Brook. That's her whole game. The other thing I think that's really interesting about the choices that they made for this place is that Jennifer Coolidge or Lady Charming is she's constantly complaining about like the men being gone.
Yes.
And them having to do these like womanly activities. And Jane is usually like, I think this is just what women did back then. And they're all like, this is bullshit.
Yes.
But like, which is not wrong. But like, it also totally makes sense that like, the guys playing these actors are probably just like, I swear to God, if I have Charmaine's hand on my ass one more time, yep. I'm going to lose it.
Well, and it's probably, yes, technically men in the Regency area would probably be out hunting, doing all that, and they wouldn't be around the women as much. So it would make total sense. But there's also probably labor laws. They had to have time off and which is why they were like over by the pool and away from everything.
Right. Well, I think it's funny that clearly Lady Charming has bought into the fact that the men are actually hunting. It's like, no.
No, ma'am. The pheasants are fake.
Well, there's a line that she has where she's like, I'm just saying, if the men don't come back, I'm asking for a refund.
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Charming has a point to being here. And it is the men's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She came here purely to flirt.
Yeah.
She's got another great line when they're getting like dressed up and everything. Or no, this is before. This is when she first meets Jane at the airport. And she's like, oh, I memorized the first three chapters of Pride and Prejudice. She's like, why are you here? And she's like, just think of how hot I'm going to look in those corsets. Oh, man. I was like, relatable content.
Yeah.
But, you know, this movie, it ended almost a little bit like an 80s, 90s comedy where like the end credits were like their own little treasure of their own. And so we get to find out that, in fact, Lady Charming has bought Austin Lane and has made it her own, which is just a lot of fuchsia pink everywhere and cupcakes, but does keep the men in the tight pants.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I approve of that message. But then it just when you think, oh, OK, it's like actually done now, where we do get to see Nobly and Jane together at this new Austin land supporting their friend.
To be fair, that's when I bought into their romance more than any other time is absolutely. When they're just like being cute at the theme park together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they've clearly had more time to get to know each other. Since
true,
then.
True. Without rules.
Yes. Without like weird rules. But then it wraps up with the two of them like in cutouts for Darcy and Jane or Darcy and Elizabeth. And you're like, oh, OK, that was a cute ending. La la la. And then immediately comes back in with Nellie's hot in here with the entire cast like having a best time dancing it out. And I'm like,
I've always loved end credits like that. They always crack me up.
Yes.
Well, I think those end credits really like encompass how much fun it must have been to film this.
Oh, yeah.
It had to just be a riot.
They had to constantly be breaking each other. I just don't think there's any way that they couldn't.
Oh, you could not listen to Jennifer Coolidge say some of that shit that right. she said without just laughing your ass off.
And again, they did a really good job of committing to the bit.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
If Colonel Andrews got up in my face and started talking about the mange.
I forgot about that.
I wouldn't be able to keep a straight face. I would have been like, mm-hmm. Ooh, ooh, no. Yep.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's the end of the movie. So that's probably the end of our discussion, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yar.
Let's go into ratings then. I guess Spice somehow.
There really isn't like even a super convincing great kiss in this movie.
No.
No. I mean, when Nobly and Jane do kiss, it is kind of cute that she calls back Jennifer Coolidge's line, tally-ho.
Yes.
But, like, that's the thing. The only, like, quote-unquote sexy thing that happens is Hartwright and Captain East making out.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, everything else, whenever it gets a little bit steamy, it gets sort of counterbalanced with cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to just give it a zero. I don't think you can say there's spice in this.
Yeah, same.
I guess I'd give it technically a 0.5.
Okay.
Because I mean, we have also consumed things that had even less.
Yeah, but like the kisses and other things, you've at least had one steamy kiss. Like Practical Magic
mm-hmm.
has one like steamy kiss.
Sure does.
Sure does.
Whereas this, like all the kisses are just like
really chaste.
Yeah.
They are. All right, zero it is. Why not?
How about your romance rating then?
Maybe a one. They were cute. I liked them. I wanted them to be together. But I was also frustrated through most of the movie going, who the fuck is real and who isn't?
Yeah, the first watch through definitely killed the romance to be like, the mystery was like, I don't know. I can't trust you. I can't trust any of you.
I know. That's my thing. I'm like, I trust no one.
I'll give it a 2 just because like the second watch, you can kind of pick up more on it.
I'm going to give it a 2.5 just because I've given 2s to some romances that were absolute dog shit. And I just don't feel like it's in that arena.
Fair enough.
And which makes me go, maybe I need to lower my ratings for romance on some of these. So yeah, 2.5 from me.
Your overall rating.
I think this is funny as shit. I do think there are some things that could have been a little bit tidier. I think that if they had been allowed to include all the things that they wanted to have in the movie, it would have been a tighter movie, even if it was longer. So I'm going to go with a 4.5. It's very funny. I watch it every time I watch it. I love it. But does it get 5 tier level? No.
I also am thinking 4.5. I laughed my ass off. I liked the characters that I was supposed to. I hated the characters I didn't. And, you know, I really enjoyed it.
I will be honest with you. After my first watch through, I was hovering between a 3 and a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
My second watch, I will bump it up to a 4 because I wasn't angry. Seriously. The first watch left me angry. And I don't want to feel angry.
It's okay. I'm not upset.
You have to justify your likeness of this movie to us.
I like to explain my reasoning.
I know.
It just seems like you're maybe still angry.
I am. I am.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's go to recommendations. And I'm going to go first because I never go first. And I want to say this before you do.
Perfect. Do it.
I know exactly which one you're going to do too, bitch.
I know. I would obviously suggest Lost in Austin, which is a miniseries. I think it's British, which is about a modern day woman who somehow gets transported back in time and into Pride and Prejudice. And Elizabeth gets transported, Elizabeth Bennet, from her world into our modern time. And it's funny and it's cute and it's romantic and I love it so much.
And the actor who plays Darcy in that has these really funny, I think they're originally on Instagram and then he sends them someplace else because they show up on TikTok and things like that, where he is Mr. Darcy, now somehow trapped in the future, trying to communicate with Lizzie. And he's like, I have this crazy contraption and this is happening. And he's constantly a bumbling fool. It's very fun.
Yeah.
So watch that and then look him up because good times. I have many things that I could suggest. I would not go so far as to call myself necessarily an Austinite because there are some of her books that just aren't for me. And that's, you know, not a judgment if they're your favorite Austins, but they're not mine. But I'm going to limit it to 2 suggestions. One is the Jane Austen Book Club, which is both a movie and a book. Both are good. I like the movie better. I think the cast is just phenomenal in it. And so they just bring more life to it, really, and show a greater appreciation, I think, than the book does for Jane Austen's works.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, do whatever you want. I'm not going to judge you on all any of that. The other suggestion I'm going to make is if you watch this and you were like, Nobly, pretty hot. He is a Jane Austen hero in, I think it's a miniseries, but it might be a movie for Northanger Abbey.
Oh, okay. Mine's going to be kind of out of left field, but like, let's be honest, you expect these things from me at this point. So there is a movie called Penelope.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a girl whose family is cursed and she is born with a pig nose, mm-hmm. And ears and multiple other things. And so the only way to break the curse is, you know, for her to marry and everything to break the curse, blah, blah, blah. So they've been, and it's to marry royalty, I believe is what it is. And so there's a fake dating aspect to it, which kind of gives me that same vibe and everything. And it's a melodrama, so it's just extremely fucking funny all the way through. Mm-hmm. And it's just a vibe thing for me on that one a little bit. And it's really cute. I love Penelope.
Okay. Well, that's the end of it, folks. If you like this episode, please find us out there on the socials at Wrong Dust Jackets. Leave a comment, leave a like. We would be elated, delighted, just happy as shit to hear from you. You can also find us on our website at wrongdustjackets.com. Check out our blog. We've got all sorts of other reviews that don't make it into the episode. And then give us 5 stars on the Spotify, the Apple Podcast, whatever you're doing. Again, we would love to hear from you. If you are listening, please, please talk to us. It's very lonely. Yeah, that's what I've got. Thanks, everyone. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, goodbye. Thank you.